Austin Hancock, what's up, dude?
What's up, man? How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
For sure, man. I appreciate you having me here.
Yeah, of course. So, Austin, for those of you that don't know this guy yet, multimillionaire, real estate investor, history in the Marine Corps, jacked, tatted. tell everybody a little bit about yourself and maybe something they don't know.
Shoot. Something they don't know. I connected with you through Taylor. So shout out to Taylor. Appreciate you connecting me. Yeah, Taylor Cavanaugh with Kevin here. I'm excited to be here. Something they may not know. I've only lived in California here for less than 45 days.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Moved here from Oklahoma.
Yep.
Yeah. Damn.
Yep. Just uprooted the whole family and just here we are. We kind of planned it out, you know, we kind of knew what we wanted to do, but, you know, changing our home or elevating our life in Oklahoma wasn't going to give us the change as deep as we wanted to.
Right.
You know, as big as we wanted to.
Yeah. And the quality of life here is just phenomenal.
I mean, everybody, it's funny when I tell people, I'm like, I'm moving, like, oh gosh, where are you going? You know, people in general, I don't care what state you're in. They're like, you're moving from the place you built your business, where you grew up or your hometown.
Yeah.
You know, I compared it the other day to people that talk about joining the military.
Yeah.
And, you have a bunch of buddies in high school that talk about joining the military. And then there's like a few that actually do it.
Right.
Like, well, we all talked about it, but some people actually do it. And so when you leave your hometown or you leave an area like that, people are confused. Like, why? You know, what's going on? What for? They need a justification for it or a reason. So they're mostly like, is it for business? You know, I'm like, well, I don't work for anybody else. So it's not for that. You know,
right.
I mean, and I can do business out here, but it's just quality of life, like you said.
Yeah. And I think that when people see somebody doing something that they wish they had the balls to do, but don't, people get jealous.
You nailed it, dude. That was. I saw that a lot because there were a few people that would tell I would say be more transparent, be honest about it. They'd be like, man, I really admire that. And I was like, man, I really appreciate you telling me that because it's not easy. Like it took, there was times where we were like, is this the right thing?
Right.
You know, second guessing it. I would say it would have been much easier if I was just single dude.
Of course. That's how I got out here.
Yeah. But to uproot my entire family, you know, our kids were in private schools there. We had built our own home. It was different. And so I would talk to people and if they'd ever been, they're like, well, where are you moving? I'm like, we're moving to San Diego. Like, oh, they kind of like, oh, I kind of get it. And then some people would push back because they're like, oh, California, you know, watch out there. And, that was pretty funny. And then I would say, well, have you been? And then they hadn't even been. People have such an opinion on things they've never experienced or ever done, which you've probably had the same feedback moving around like you have.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It's funny to see like people in Texas and California kind of like just talk shit back and forth.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you guys both vacation to both places. Like, you know, it's like
some people probably have homes in both places.
Yeah, I know. It's like people talk shit about Texas and then they move to Dallas or Austin or Houston. And then I see a lot of Texas plates out here just saying, you know, side note, Whataburger sucks. In-N-Out is better.
Oh, 100%. I agree. I concur.
Do you?
Yeah. And Whataburger's like huge in Oklahoma, right? Like,
yeah.
Oklahoma's. This is going to hurt a lot of feelings. Oklahoma is kind of like the ugly stepsister of Texas, right?
Oh, damn. I mean, yeah.
It kind of is, you know, just it is what it is.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so.
I mean, it's not a bad place. I would never bow. I mean, it did me great, treated me great. The people in there, there's great people there.
Right.
We just personally wanted to be somewhere different. We wanted to change your life. We wanted to do so much. You and I were talking off camera a minute ago and talking about, you know, you could go snow skiing 2 hours away from here. You can be in the desert.
Yeah.
And go and do whatever you want in Palm Springs, less than 2 hours away from here.
Yeah.
You know, you can be in Las Vegas in 4 to 5 hours if you wanted to drive it. There's just so many things. Arizona's close.
Yeah. I mean, Mexico's right there.
Yeah. You know? And not to mention like roughly where I live and probably where the studio is. We're 15 minutes from the beach or less.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on the water.
Yep.
And then you get a different variance of kind of beaches you want to go to. La Jolla's different than Del Mar. You know, Carlsbad's different than Encinitas, things like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. California's awesome, man, especially Southern California, because San Diego is like its own little pocket. And when people who aren't from here or haven't been here, people hear California and they think like what they hear in the news, like San Francisco crime.
For sure.
Extremely liberal. And it's not like that. Actually, most of California, if you've ever done a road trip up I-5 or 99, you'll notice that most of California looks very similar to Oklahoma or Texas.
Well,
you
way
know?
Better.
A lot of farm,
way better.
Way better.
Yeah, but you mean like farmland stuff? Yeah.
You get to like Bakersfield and Fresno. It doesn't look much different. And the values are the same. There's farmers out there. There's hardworking people. Most of them are extremely conservative. So when people think of California as like this liberal, free for all with just crimes. You know, it's some of it is like that, but 99% of it is not.
No,
you know?
I totally agree, man. Yeah, I totally agree. But what and I've analyzed this from moving out here. My wife and I talk about this a lot. What I've seen is that it's the limelight, right? Like California gets a lot of attention. Florida gets a lot of attention.
Right.
You know, Las Vegas gets some attention. So it's the pretty girl in school. So of course you're going
to
get criticized,
good way to
right?
Put it.
But it is going to get criticized more. You know, it's the famous person. If you were to look at the states, like, so of course it is. Well, why is it? Well, because everybody's been drawn towards it since the gold rush, and then everybody's been for the weather and everything else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then there are opportunities out here. And my thought process, and we don't do business out here yet.
Yeah.
But my thought process was like acclimation, right? And you being an entrepreneur, you can probably attest to this, but proximity is power. And so I was around very well-to-do and successful people that helped me in Oklahoma build my businesses. You know, I would ask questions, get into groups, you know, do whatever I could to network, which you and I talked off mic, and it sounds like that's what you've done as well to grow your business. And so I was like, well, shoot, if this applies here, it can apply anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I might as well expand that to a place where I want to be and the kind of life I want to live.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, when I first moved back to Boston, you know, I lived for a little while in Southern Oregon, right? In my late teens, early 20s. And then I moved back to Boston when I was like 20 years old. And the reason I did that was I realized the place that I lived had no opportunity for the most part. So I'm like, man, I got to get somewhere where people have money, because then there's going to be opportunities, right?
100%.
If I can get out there, I know that I can make relationships.
And you're driven, right?
Yeah, right. And that's the thing is when I did that, a lot of people are like, what are you doing?
100%.
You know? And again, when I moved from Boston to California, people are like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? It's so crazy. And some people are inspired, like you were saying, but some people are like, bro, you're going to fail. You're going to come back here. And you know what, man? Like, even if I do, I still end up at the same place that I was before. I'm not probably going to go much lower.
Oh, 1,000%, dude. I said something that's super, this is going to offend people. This is some good clickbait. But I was like, dude, worst case scenario. Fucking go worse, belly up here. Like everything, my business back home or wherever I virtually run, you know, all of my stuff goes upside down. Everything goes south.
Yeah.
The worst thing is I can go back and get like a 2,500 square foot house with my knowledge in real estate now.
Yeah.
I could have what most people still are trying to get. Like, I mean, I could drive a middle class average little vehicle. I could buy a fucking 2,500 square foot, $400,000 house.
Yep.
Because I've educated myself on how to get those. Even if I didn't have a bank, even if I had bad credit, I still have the knowledge to be able to go and do that.
Right.
And I still have the connections. Like with my connections, it's crazy, you know?
Yep.
And so, you know, as cocky or egotistical as that may sound, it's just the facts. Like once you learn how to do something,
things change.
You can't take it away from you. Exactly. It's like riding a bicycle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's why you see like these shows, like what was that, the Undercover Billionaire, and they're like, you can't contact any of your contacts because they could have the whatever they needed and within a snap of a second of a phone call because of the reputation that they have. So they have to change like their alias.
Yeah. But you can make connections, right? And that's another thing. So like the only difference between you and somebody else is, you know, let's just say that somebody's maybe working a job that they hate. They're not making much money. They're not doing much of their life, and they know they can do better. I think it's risk taking and learning skills. That's
100%. Yeah, but I think there's something that you're not including there that you and I have, and that's the drive.
Because
that can't be instilled in. I mean, I've seen people I'll talk a lot about wanting a lot and wanting to do a lot,
right?
And then day after day, they don't put in the work.
Right.
Week after week, they don't make any of the same they don't make any of the changes. You know, and you having Taylor on here, and you've had some great guests on here, probably talked a lot about like personal development, but I truly think your personal development is how it starts. Like you were talking a minute ago about a situation when you went out and had some headspace when you were in the ocean and you were on your jet ski.
Yep.
You know, but that's personal development. You know what I'm saying? And same for me. Like I started by like, there's information out there I don't know.
Yeah.
And in order to get where I want to get, I have to figure out how to do this. So I have to pick up a book. I have to listen to the podcast. I have to go to these meetups. Even though I look like an idiot, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm going to ask a bunch of questions. Like I was willing to just give it all because we're only given this one life. And I think some people are very hesitant towards betting on themselves or even trying.
Yeah.
And so you can't take away the fact that like I was driven, still driven to do more. And you were driven.
I got this tattoo.
You're going to die.
Reminder, exactly. You're going to die. Because,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, most people think that, like, I think that people just don't you understand when you get to, like, 30 that time flies like crazy. And luckily
we understand.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some people don't.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I think the more self-aware you are, the more you kind of focus on this stuff.
True. But, clarity, man. Clarity is huge. And so that's something that I beat on the drum a lot is like, you can't hit a target you can't see. So if you don't really know what you want, where you want to go. I had a lot of friends on the, I'll call it the come up, and I'm still on my mind, still trying to come up, right? Like, so keep going, right? We have different levels to break. And so a lot of friends, like, how do you do this? And you probably had friends too that saw you go from nothing to something to a little more in your life, and then ask questions. And you could just see that they weren't willing to put in that effort, or they had a lot of resistance at home. So they're married to, maybe they don't believe in them. You know, the history that they have with themselves of continually talking about something and never doing it.
Right.
And so it's just a bad cycle.
Yeah.
So we're on down the drain.
Yeah. It's, you know, a lot of people will reach out via DM, be like, hey, can you show me how to do this? Can you show me how to do that? And what I realize is 9 out of 10 of those people won't put the work in, won't do anything after that. They realize that you actually have to put in work. You have to show up. You have to be disciplined. And I just don't get it. Like, people live their lives in such an uncomfortable fashion, working a job they don't like, living in a house they don't like, not being able to pay bills.
But that's easier than going through the stress that they think that it's easy. Well, it is in a fact in my mind that it's easier because they can blame somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, you can't blame anybody for your situation as an entrepreneur, and I can't either.
Yeah.
You know, it's up to us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, how much of that do you think is the subconscious mind?
Oh, a ton. Well, I think you have to dive into yourself, personal development. You have to start really asking yourself what you think and what you think of yourself and where you think of where you can go, and people's fears, and all these fears can be based back on, you know, how they grew up, you know, what they were told when they were in school and all these other things. And that's why you hear a lot of people right now are on the fitness journey or being in the best shape or wanting to look good, because that does add confidence to you when you talk to somebody. If you're proud of yourself, when you present yourself, then it adds to the next level, the next level, the next level.
Yeah.
And something that I wanted to hit on that you mentioned a minute ago, I don't remember how you mentioned it, but was I had an epiphany at a certain point with the work effort, how much effort is willing to go into it. And I was like, well, if I'm willing to have sleepless nights, if I'm willing to try to figure out and be strapped for payroll, if I'm willing to, you know, go and do whatever it takes, take the same mentality I had, you know, wanting to be a Marine, take the same mentality that some of us just innately have,
right?
Like, willing to do whatever it takes, because you're going to die, like you have a tattoo of.
Yeah.
You know, then I want to make sure that all that effort is in the right vehicle. And so financial vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so I could work really, really hard growing something that maybe is 10 times harder to scale than something that we know, you know, that somebody else has already done that's easier. And so that's when I started to learn about real estate.
Yeah.
And that's when I stopped trying to be, you know, be the best builder.
Right.
And started to really try to, and those skills all worked in my favor because it's somewhat of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to make sure that it was the vehicle that got me to where I want to go.
Yeah.
You know, for even down to, you can have so many different types of real estate companies, right? So I told you we moved out here. Well, I had to shift our whole company in 2023 in order to position ourselves to be able to move out here. It was brick and mortar. We had employees in house. You know, we changed a lot, and our employees had to shift and change and adapt, and some stay, some go. And ourselves, it was really hard for me when I'm driving the same exact route and pattern every single day to go to my office after I built the company for the last, you know, X amount of years, to be like, oh no, now you work from home. Well, what does that look like? Or, oh, you can work here, and it's creating your own schedule.
Yeah.
And so, but I say all that because if that change, that hard growth period was what was going to get me the lifestyle I wanted to get.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then I see other people that love building big businesses with, you know, 10, 20, hundreds of employees. And it's just to each their own.
Right.
But you have to kind of have clarity on where you want to go. And I think at the very beginning of us, we all just want to, like, oh, I just want to make my own money.
Yeah.
I want to get out there.
Yeah.
And then you start to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's not what I want to do.
Yeah.
I really want to do that. I really want to do this, or I really want to live here. Like, things expand and change, you know?
Right. So I want to kind of circle back to your childhood and how you grew up and what led you from, because I know you had some legal challenges when you were younger.
Yeah.
But then you turned it around. You went to the Marine Corps, you know, at 18, 19?
Yeah, I went to the Marine Corps at 18.
Yeah,
so, I enlisted like 17, but I ended up, when I shipped out, I was 18.
Yeah. So a little rough around the edges when you were younger. Sure. We probably would have been friends.
Yeah, 100%.
So how'd you grow up?
So I grew up a really conservative family. You know, my family is a traditional American family. You know, my dad is an engineer.
Yep.
And so he became an entrepreneur once we moved to Oklahoma. He got laid off. So he was an engineer, got transferred from Kansas. I was born in Kansas. He got transferred to Oklahoma. And then like within a year, he got laid off. And so he had to take a pay cut and get another engineering job. And that was kind of hard, you know, financial unstable. But they're very smart with their money, conservative, you know, middle class people.
Yeah.
And so he started his own business from there. And I kind of saw him become an entrepreneur and what it took. And then my grandfather also was.
How old were you when that was happening?
So I moved when I was 8.
Yeah.
So I moved when I was 8, and then he got laid off like 9, 10. So I was 9 or 10.
So you saw him figure it out.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure it out. Like had the job, built his first house.
Right.
He became a builder because his dad, my grandfather,
yeah,
owned a construction company in Kansas. And so he was like, I'm going to go do what I know. And now I have an engineering degree. I'm going to start that and hope it works. And he sold that house and got a couple more.
How much of that, like watching your dad do that, shaped you? Cause we follow patterns, especially when you're younger. Like you have nothing else to gauge off of. Most of your time is spent around your parents or school.
Yeah.
So, and school doesn't do shit for life. Like school, you know, molds you to go work in a factory, right?
100%.
Like not a content factory, but you know,
plug.
Yeah. By the way, we're shooting plug. This from the Content Factory here in San Diego. If you're looking to rent a podcast studio, go to contentfactorysandiego.com. Anyways.
I love it.
So how much of that really like shaped going forward, knowing that your dad did it and did it well, right? Yep. And then when you went and did that make it easier for you to take risks?
So I think there's a massive pro and there could also be a con. And okay. So, and I'll explain.
Yeah.
And then we'll go back and I'll go back and talk about the rest of my childhood.
Yeah.
So a massive pro was seeing it that it was possible and seeing him do it. But fast forward a bit for right now, when I went to work for him, you know, in the summers and things like that, he taught me work ethic. I learned a lot of skills. Like I've trimmed houses, I've pulled concrete, I've tied rebar, I learned to weld. I could do pretty much anything in a home. And so I was a massive skill going into being a builder and starting my own company.
And this was all when you were in high school?
This is when I was in high school. Wow. And then after I got out of the Marines, I went back.
Right.
You know, working for him.
Right.
And so I worked for him before in high school, through high school. And then I worked for him after I got out of the Marine Corps as well. Before I started my own company.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I'll go through the timeline in a minute. But to answer your question, there were huge pros of seeing that possible. And that's what I didn't realize what kind of a gift it was at the beginning, because I see the fear. And let's say I was talking to you and you had never started your own business prior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could just see the longer you wait, you just had a baby.
Yeah.
You're going to get married, let's say. You have all these responsibilities to add up. And then now you're going to go start off and jump on the deep end. The older you get, the more things you have, the house, the shit that you live, you accumulate as humans.
Yeah.
Makes it harder for people to take that leap. And so having somebody that was an entrepreneur dad and knowing that I had the skill set to go do it or somebody to lean on and ask questions was huge.
Right.
The caveat was he only did it his way. So I only learned one way.
Right.
And I didn't know any better. And at least I'll speak for myself, but I think most of us, you know, when you grow up, your parents and especially mine, pretty conservative. And, you know, he had success. So he saw success. So how could I challenge his opinion on it?
Right.
I have nothing.
Right.
At the time. So challenging his opinion on it, even though I had my own ways and I was cultivating my own entrepreneurial spirit and I wanted to come in and help him with his company, I wanted to be driven. He's an engineer. It's not like open and armed,
right,
you know, hug and said, yeah, that's a great idea, son. Take your division and you could start this and you can start that. He's not that. I would say, I'll be honest, I think my dad's less of an entrepreneur and probably more of an engineer, like literally an engineer now.
Yeah.
So
he more took a calculated risk then, right?
Because everything's calculated. He's less, he's very risk adverse, but he's also, what I'm saying is like, there was things that he thought were fact, that he would say were fact.
That were not.
You know, because he never explored educating himself further as an entrepreneur.
Right.
And that's no dog on him. It's just true.
Right.
Like, so people cap out. There's lots of small businesses across the United States. There's lots of people that don't get into masterminds, that don't expand their network, that don't try to hit the next level.
Right.
You know, and my mom said this to me the other day as we moved, you know, she's like, I'm proud of you. You know, I've seen what you've done. It's so amazing. She goes, something I think that's different between you and your wife and your dad and I, when we were young starting out, was we were just trying to survive. Like we were just trying to grow a business.
Right.
We never thought this far as I think you and Alicia do, my wife.
Right.
And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. that makes a lot of sense. Because if you don't have that vision of, I want to have X, or I want to live this way, or I want to do this, like, what is the vision, the long right. vision?
Yeah.
Then you're just trying to survive day by day by day by day by day. Well, you can snap your fingers in 40 years of entrepreneurship there.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, wanting to go and become a multimillionaire, to live a lifestyle, to have cool cars, to give my kids vacations, to travel the world, to do all the things that I can come up with is the wildest dreams, your vision board. I had to start figuring out the backwards math.
Right.
But when
right.
you're- when
Oh
you're,
man, what you just said. Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
I wanna dive into that. You just said the backwards math.
Yeah,
right?
you have to work the math backwards.
Right? You're reverse engineering your
100%.
Goals.
100%. But a lot of people start at the other way.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad's one of those guys. He started like, it's the day by day, week by week. You know, there's not a lot of forethought to yeah. what 2025 looks like right this moment.
Right, right. So for somebody who's listening to this, if they have goals, or maybe they don't have goals, they don't have clarity, which I know you talk about a lot about clarity around your goals. How do they go out and develop a plan? And like you said, reverse engineer their goals so that they can say, okay, so maybe they want to get the Lamborghini or the
sure.
G-Wagon.
Yeah, and sometimes it starts like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's materialistic. You can hack on it all you want, but like, it literally starts like that. It's like, for me as a little boy, I would ride my bike to 7-Eleven before freaking internet was big, and I would get an Auto Trader.
Right.
And I would look at cars, and I was trying to project and figure out what kind of car I wanted, because I was a car guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe you guys have kids have looked at toys or something like that. Like, don't beat that up. You know, think about that and how that expands. Like, what kind of life do you really want? I think so many people squash that down because they're told that things are bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where it starts.
Right.
And then once you break through some of those ceilings, or you do those things, like, I want to have a 3,300 square foot office is what I had in Oklahoma. I want to build it out. I want my name on the wall. I want my desk to have the CEO plaque, or whatever the fuck that people think that they want.
Yeah.
Once you get there, you may be like, well, this isn't what I want. I mean, literally what happened to me is I had an office. I had multiple people in a ballroom. We started wholesaling. We started building the company. And I was like, I have to show up every day from 7 to 7 now. I just created a fucking prison. Like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And then to unwind that with your own personal expenses tied to it is a mess.
Yeah.
So that's, you go through things, you have to go through those levels and those things in order to see if that's really what you want.
Right.
You know.
So let's just say that somebody wants to make $1 million, right? They want to be a millionaire like you. How do they reverse engineer that goal into, like, step by step, you know, from the goal back instead of
from
question. Where they are to the goal?
Sure, sure. You have to ask yourself why you want $1 million, because most people don't really have a tangible idea of what $1 million can get you, or what it does, or what is a millionaire. You know, you could even ask the question back to you, like, what is a millionaire? You know, is it a net worth millionaire?
Yeah.
Is it $1 million in assets? Is it $1 million in gross revenue? Because you can have $1 million in gross revenue and make 10% net, and you're still not doing well. You hear realtors all the time, we did $40 million last year. And I'm like, well, what did you bring home? Like, well, we made $75,000. Okay, chill. After brokers, fees, and expenses. And anyways. You have to ask why you want to obtain what that is, in my opinion, because that's where I went deep. And it kept going back to the same things. That's why I'm here in San Diego talking to you. And we just met,
right?
Is because I had to really analyze, like, what was it that I wanted? What do I want all this money for? If you're just chasing the money, I mean, I have a good example. I had lunch with a guy that sold his company for $80 million, and then he ended up making another. He had a percentage still in the company, and then they ended up reselling it, and he made more, almost a little over $100 million. And I met him, and I was the only person I really was like, dude, I'm proud. He was in an entrepreneur group that I was in. And he has Huracan, Ferrari, $5 million house in Oklahoma, which is mansion, bro.
That's
super
sick pad.
Massive. Love it. And he deserves it. Like, he built his business from scratch. Great story. And I was like, dude, I'm going to show him my car, because I was proud when I bought my Lambo, right? First exotic. This is cool.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me, he was like, man, I'm glad you drove your car. He goes, I still feel awkward driving mine. And so the reason I say that is because I see people that, somebody said this best the other day. They're like, I see people that drive the Lambo, and I see other people that the Lambo drives them.
Oh.
And I'm like,
damn.
That's facts though.
Right.
Like, that's true. Like, if you never wanted one, don't get one to have clout. Get what you want.
Right.
Go, you know, I know multi-millionaires that don't give a shit about a Lambo.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, make a lot of money, and there's a lot of them walking around.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, if cars are your passion, if, you know, you want to have nice watches, if you want to have certain things, it's funny that, like, the cars, for some reason, it just drives me crazy, like on Instagram and social media. But like cars for some reason are like this measure, and you hear all the poor people being like, if you're really rich, you wouldn't drive that. It's like, you're really rich, you do what the fuck you want.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
yeah,
you do drive that. Right. Like, you do if you want to. Yeah. If you don't, you don't. Yeah. That's what you really do.
Yeah. It's funny when people say like, oh, well, billionaires drive, you know, pickups and stuff.
Yeah, they're
and,
all the same.
And they drive, you know, an old 85, you know, Bronco or something. It's like, yeah, that's because they don't want to get fucking shot. Like, you know, they got a security detail following them. And trust me, they've got cars too.
They 100%
do. They live in a $40 million house.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
But I think that one thing that's really important is identifying if you're material, because being materialistic is fine, especially if that drives you. Like, I mean, we like nice watches. Yeah. It's a way you feel when you put it on. It's also social proof when other people kind of, whether you want to agree with it or not,
no,
people gauge if they trust you or not based off little things like that. Same thing with an exotic car. But I think that a big thing is people will chase these materialistic things thinking that it's going to fulfill them. And maybe sometimes inadvertently it does, but really it's more like for me, right? I have a nice truck. I've got a couple cars, a couple cool things. I don't have any Lambos or anything, but it's very, very nice to get in this, you know, like a Ford Raptor, right? It's a good feeling. But the best part about it is that I fucking earned it and put in all that work. And that fulfillment doesn't come from having the truck.
Right.
It doesn't. You know, that's not where it comes from. That's what I thought it would. I thought you get the truck and you feel good. No, it's the hard work and all the discipline and all the shit that it took, all the risks that it took to get to that point to be able to do that. And it's not it's nothing crazy, you know?
No, and it wears off, right? Like it's the fun wears off of it after a while. And then it's the next thing and it's the next thing. It's the next thing. It's just like when you were younger and you wanted some sneakers, but now you look back and you're like, you didn't give a damn about them or whatever it was. For me, it was bikes, right? I rode bikes everywhere in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, at the time growing up in Oklahoma, you know, it was Hoffman bikes, dude. Hoffman's from Oklahoma. So it was the whole thing, and BMX. And so, you know, you have the bat bike, but guess what? Like after you got a car, you didn't give a shit.
Right.
You know, except for the one dude that still goes to the skate park and rides his bike. So it just depends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I remember wanting a Redline bike so bad.
I had a Redline. I had an older one. Yeah, my dad bought it. I didn't even know what it was. And what's funny is I didn't like the Redline because I wanted a Hoffman. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about Redline.
Yeah. That's funny.
That's hilarious, man.
Yeah.
It was old.
Dude, imagine we were talking, because I have a electric dirt bike, the Suron, and we were talking about it. Man, imagine having that when you were a kid. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Crazy.
Well, I want to talk about that too. Like going back to the Lambos and these cars and these things like that. Like for me, to be completely frank, like that kind of stuff, your electric dirt bike, that's cool. Just as cool. Like I like experiences. And that's something I want to hit on is like, for me, the car was an experience. You know, I've owned a lot of classics, muscles. Like I've built my own cars. I've done my own body work. You know, I've done my own lift kits on all my trucks, being a redneck from Oklahoma.
Hell yeah, I bet you have.
Not having any money, you know, so you got to do it.
Yeah.
And traded parts on Facebook before that was Craigslist. And hustled to get what I wanted to do and design it my way. And I was just as proud of my lifted truck that I wrapped myself, even though it looked a little shitty, and the wheels that I got off Craigslist that I cleaned up and put new tires on.
Yeah, but you did it. It's that fulfillment piece of it.
I was just as proud driving that thing around as I was when I bought my Lamborghini. So it's like, you know, and then like going back to experiences. Like for me, that was an experience. I had an experience driving that specific truck that I built and I felt proud. I had experience driving the Lamborghini when I drive it around. It's an experience. You know, if it was, you owned a yacht or if you own something else, like there's different levels of experiences. Some experiences just cost more than others.
Right.
Your experience sitting in the back, an economy flying to Europe on the budget trip is going to be different than flying first class and balling out or doing what you want to do.
Right.
And to what's funny, it's like both would probably be fun. I don't know if you have an open mind, right?
And it comes down to perspective, right? Like when you're sick, all you want is to be healthy. But when you're healthy, you want a million different things. So I think, you know, there's this picture of this guy watching a guy in a car. And he's like, man, I really wish I had that car. You know, and he's riding a bike, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a guy walking who's looking at the guy on the bike. And he's like, man, I really wish I had a bike.
Yeah.
And then there's somebody in a wheelchair watching the guy who's walking, being like, man, I really wish that I could walk. And I think that just having clarity and having perspective around like how fucking good we have it, especially if you've seen places in the world that have it really bad,
100%.
It makes you realize like, dude, even a really bad day here is a really fucking good day, you know?
Absolutely, man.
So like for me, when I was, you know, like I fly first class most of the time now.
Me too.
And, you know, I remember the first time I flew first class.
It's a big deal.
Much bigger deal than it is now.
Yeah, for sure.
Like I remember on my most recent first class flight, you know, they pull the little table out that sits, and my, you know, thing kind of took a minute to get out. And I'm like, ah, what the fuck, you know? But the first time I flew first class, I'd be like, this is great.
Yeah. That's hilarious that you said that. You know? The same thing. Yeah. I was like, dude, this is first class dog shit. Like, these things don't work either.
Yeah. It's
But the first time, dude, it was like, man, all I see people walking fast.
Yeah.
Cool. Right.
Yeah. It's a, but
I'm proud of myself because I paid for the ticket.
Yes.
And then I realized when I was up there too, I was like, dude, there's a lot of other people up there. And then I was like, well, some of these people probably get corporate jobs that pay for those tickets and they have something else. So, you know, I was maybe even more proud of being somebody that did it myself.
But it's fulfillment. It's not you being in first class. It's the feeling that you worked for it and you got there.
Right.
So the
short answer to all of it is like, have those materialistic aspirations or this life from or whatever it is, but you're not going to just know that the happiness comes within.
Right.
Like happiness is how you wake up every day. So how would you wake up in somewhere that didn't have all of these nice things, not in a 5,000 square foot house, not having a Lamborghini, not in all these things.
Right.
Like I was still, my wife and I talk about this. We were like, we were the same people. Like when we didn't have anything really. I mean, we had stuff, we had a house, but I'm saying like when we didn't have anything, even when I was in the military, I was the same positive. I was the same kind of guy
right.
for the most part. I wasn't disgruntled. I wasn't mad about what I didn't have because you didn't care. You didn't know.
Right.
So, but I found happiness there. I still joked around and had great times.
Yeah. Man. Yeah.
So
let's talk about, you got into some trouble when you were younger.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Let's dive in. Cause that's a big piece of your story. And we kind of share some of that too. Cause I've had my share of legal battles and you know,
yeah.
So tell me.
Checkered past.
Yeah.
So grew up middle class, you know, family. My parents became entrepreneurs and they slowly started to build the business and business got a little bigger. And they actually moved out of the neighborhood that I grew up in when I was in the military, after I joined the Marines. They moved while I was gone.
Okay.
And, so I got 17 years old. I had two felonies and two misdemeanors. I had, long story short, because this could probably be another hour, but
yeah.
Long story short, I had gone to a party and I had gotten jumped. Me and a buddy went out back. He was like, one of the homeowners was there, or the 21-year-old young man that was leasing the house was there. It was a house party.
Yeah, yeah.
Asked me to come out back. He's like, hey, come out back. And then they jumped us. So we came back and full force.
Yeah.
And got a bunch of tools out of the car or the truck that we had and busted in a bunch of the windows, caused a bunch of mayhem, tried to get our revenge for getting jumped, you know, for what we no idea why. And we left to rile up a couple other more buddies to get a whole pack because we're all just drunk and pissed off.
Yeah.
You know,
bunch of rednecks.
Yeah.
And trucks,
bunch of rednecks.
Right?
Let's go. Yeah. 100%. You know, I think at the time I'm a senior in high school. Some dudes we knew just graduated. So they're probably 18. They're all partying and stuff too.
A lot of ego mixed with alcohol.
Tons.
Good combo.
Yeah. You're just all guys like all jacked up and ready to go.
Yeah.
And so we all went back to the house. What we didn't know is that the police had been there because they filed a report for us busting all the windows in the front of the house after they jumped us. And so the guy in front of me kicks in the door. And he's like, is this the guy that jumped you guys? And it was him. He was at the party because he was just leaving the door because the cops had just left.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah. And then I stroked this dude over the head with a tire iron and started spewing blood and immediately kind of was like, oh, shit, this could go south. Like, this could have gone worse. 100%.
Yeah.
And we kind of started scrapping around. Next thing I know, cops are yelling at me to get outside and get on the ground. And so they were right around the corner. Somebody else at the party had called the cops right when we busted in the door.
Right.
And so I got the assault with a deadly weapon. And I got burglary one just for entering the property. I didn't steal anything.
And you were under, isn't that crazy how burglary
Yeah, but I entered somebody else's property and it's a burglary charge.
Yeah. But when people hear burglary, I don't think they...
I have a mask on and I steal stuff.
It's a felony inside of a house that you don't have permission to be in, correct. Right?
And that's right.
So like I've heard of people, for instance, in Oregon, one of my friends is a cop up there. And you know, if somebody before when it was a felony to have methamphetamine possession, you know, somebody get caught in like an abandoned house and they would turn a possession charge, I'm pretty sure, into a burglary, you know, because they're committing a felony inside a house or they're doing something else, not just drug possession, but like maybe they are a felon with a gun, right? That's a felony.
Yeah.
And now you're considered a burglar. You know, I mean, burglar. I just think that people think burglary is,
stealing.
The black thing on your face and you're kind of creeping through the night.
I think so too.
So, okay. So you go to juvie or what?
Yeah. So, I mean, I got locked up. I just went to the local PD and then they put me down in county. And so I went to county and I was in the juvie side of county.
Okay.
A couple other buddies were 18 at the time. There's all of us. We all got locked up.
But, yeah.
I had the two felony charges, two misdemeanors. And essentially, long story short, I was going to join the military anyway, so I didn't want people to think that I was joining the military to get out of the charges. I had already plans to join the military. I was still working for my dad in the summer.
Right.
And a couple of guys were like, you know, you should join the military. It's probably best for you. I'd gotten in quite a few other fights, too, that, like I said, we could talk all day about it. But, like, I was causing a lot of problems. At 17 yeah. years old, I flipped a switch and started causing problems. And testosterone, I guess, right? At 17, yeah. being a young man, trying to carve my own path, disgruntled, trying to prove myself, things like that.
Yep.
And so I went to a recruiter, a Marine recruiter, and he's like, yeah, man. He was pretty honest about it. He's like, yeah, I'll do my best and see what we can do. Because I told him, like, dude, I got two charges right now. I'm 17, about to turn 18 in May, and we're going to see what happens. He goes, okay, let me talk to your attorney. He talks to my attorney. We go through the whole Marine Corps side process, the normal recruiting process. And then we go to the attorney, and the attorney's like, yeah, let's take it to the judge. And so they essentially went up there. My attorney represented me, and the recruiter went with him and said, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
Austin's going to join the Marine Corps. You know, he signs up, and if he gets out with an honorable discharge, then we'll expunge all charges. And so I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to get where I wanted to go, which was the military.
So you had an open case that whole time.
Correct. I was going to go. Shit. They were pending sending me to like a juvenile delinquent center. Because I was still 17 in the charges, but I was going to turn 18. Yeah. And so they were looking at, the attorney had already prepped me. Like, they're probably going to, the judge I had was a female, and she was like, she was wanting to make a point. And so she was like, they were looking at 6 months of juvie, you know, 6 months of juvenile delinquent center, which probably would have ended up a whole different life. Who knows what would have happened? Because you get more fights in those types of places. You have to prove yourself more.
And you're around. Just, I mean, you turn into the five people you're around 100%, the most, right?
100%. So. Yeah. And at that time in my life, I wasn't a bad kid. I mean, I say that after I just told you that story. Yeah, but like, the reality was I made a big mistake. It was stupid. It wasn't, you know, I was drunk. And a lot of times alcohol definitely makes us make big mistakes. Yeah. But honestly, like, as a person, as a citizen of Oklahoma, as the town, I was a good kid. Like, I meant well, I held doors for people. I was a good, well-rounded kid. My parents are still married today. I grew up in a conservative home, traditional values, you know, so I wasn't like I was a thug selling drugs and then doing all this stuff and then drive-bys and shit like that. Wasn't. I was just a, you know, middle-class kid being a dumbass, to be honest.
Yeah.
I just caught myself up. And so anyways, the judge goes, sure. He goes, he's going to join the Marine Corps. And this is in 2006. So you got to think, like, in Iraq was kicking off. Like, George Bush was getting ready to do the surge and pushing people to Iraq. So they were funneling people through the military because they're trying to get as many bodies over to Iraq as they could.
Yeah.
And so I was part of that. And so I joined and I went to boot camp in like first part of 2006.
Yep.
And it was the best thing for me, man. Like, I really found in the Marine Corps, I found other people with the very similar attitudes. Like, gonna fight it out, gonna drink, cause problems, gonna be rowdy. Like, I didn't feel like an outcast. I felt like a bad person.
You felt like you belonged.
I felt like I belonged.
And you needed 100%. That, right?
Yeah, but it was like harnessed somehow. The Marine Corps harnesses it a bit.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty good at what they do, right?
Breaking 100%. You down. And yeah, yeah.
So, okay, question for you. So you join the Marine Corps, but you strike me as somebody who does not like to be told what to do. So just like me, right? But there's something weird about people who share that. And I don't know what it is, but it's like when it's your choice, because you, I mean, even though you're kind of, you had a situation, this was your plan before.
It was.
You being there is you giving them permission to tell you what to do. For so sure. Really, you're in control of it, but you're not.
Yeah, right? I guess in my mind, like, I probably didn't think that far through at that time. Well, I was like, oh my God, thank God.
I think you
but
did.
Yeah, you're right, 100%. And I'd always wanted to be, like, I grew up with the movies, man. I always wanted to be a warrior. Like, I was playing Army with Sticks. I was playing Soldier. I was watching The Terminator. I was watching Rambos. I was watching all those movies, you know? Yeah. So I was ate up with war. I mean, I'm still a huge war buff and history buff. I still love to watch like World War II documentaries and all sorts of wars.
Yeah, history is incredible, man.
Yeah, but I was ate up with it. Like, ate up with it. I had books. I have everything. My mom was like, oh, man, he's probably going to join. Like,
yeah.
So they were super upset when I joined, even though it was probably better than the alternative.
Right. Yeah.
They knew I was going to war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to war with yourself or somebody else.
That's right. That's a good point, man.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's funny how it's like, you know, I mean, Taylor talked about destiny on the podcast, and I feel like we're all kind of like intuitively driven towards a certain destiny, right? Like, we have a path that we know we need to follow. And when we stray from it, we kind of, it's less fulfilling, right?
It's so true.
And I think some people, their destiny is doing fentanyl and overdosing and dying. Unfortunately, like, I don't know why we're here on this earth, but I think that.
Good question.
You know? Yeah. I think, I mean, nobody really does, but I think we're here to learn and have experiences. So So you join the Marine Corps.
Yep.
And how does that shape your future? I mean, you get this discipline that's with you forever and you're still a child. Like if you're in the Marine Corps at 18, you're a child and they really can mold you, right?
100%. Yeah, yeah. And most guys, so I don't know how many people know this, but a lot of the Marine Corps is a very young branch. Like a lot of people that join the Marine Corps are very young. Like the oldest guy in my boot camp class of 70-ish people was 24, and I thought he was an old man.
Yeah.
Like, so it's a very young group of people that join. And a lot of people join the Marine Corps not to get a bonus like the Army, not to have the cushy life of the Air Force or go to college a lot of times.
Yeah.
They join the Marine Corps to have the Marine Corps name, right?
Right.
They want the heritage. They want the reputation. Their father was a Marine or somebody in their family.
Yeah.
They want to be a part of that brotherhood and that community. And
the
Marine Corps does provide that. I mean, it does. It gives you that. Like I said, I felt like, and it has its time, right? You do your time, and if you choose to, you get out. But it does still have that. It carries that throughout now. Like I told you a minute ago, I connected with another Marine that was out here. We didn't serve together, don't know him, but had something in common. I knew I could reach out and say, hey, I know you're in the Marine Corps, brother. I was too from this period of time. You know, check, you know, this is what I've done before I moved to San Diego, and made a connection. So it's like, it's a brotherhood. It really is.
Right.
And so it was good that I went from those troubles or that rowdiness, I'll call it, to moving into the Marines and shifting it to being a Marine.
Well, you still got to be a rowdy dude, but polished. Yeah,
it's 100% right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Like it's exactly right. Good way to put that.
Yeah. It's funny to see. Yeah, that's cool. So, okay. So you joined the Marine Corps. What'd you do in the Marine Corps?
So I was a 0352. I was a tow gunner. And so my job skill that I was taught in SOI, School of Infantry, was to be an anti-tank assaultman. So our job is, we're infantry, but we're also there to blow up tanks. We're typically mechanized in like Humvee form. And so we shoot missiles and into tanks and blow them up. Well, and then 2007, I got deployed to Iraq. There's no tanks to blow up anymore. It's not that kind of combat zone anymore. And so we ended up, when I deployed in 2007 to Haditha, Iraq, I was a what's called jump platoon. So I did personal security for the battalion commander and battalion sergeant major.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were just escorting VIPs with the battalion commander and battalion sergeant major. So it was a pretty cool duty.
Wow.
And that was my only deployment. I only did one deployment, but it was a cool duty. And it was in the Al-Anbar province.
Okay. Wow. Yep. Damn. Yep. So, okay. So you get out of the Marine Corps.
Yep.
And what year did you get out?
I got out in 2010 and then like my IRR time after that, but I actively got out in 2010.
Okay, cool. And then, so what was your next step, right? So
a
lot of guys lose their purpose. You know, the Marine Corps is there.
Way.
Did you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I felt that way. Oddly enough, right? Like I went back to work in construction, which I was disgruntled about because I get to do some cool shit. You know, you go from doing all the things you do in the Marine Corps and to going and back to construction. In my mind, it was kind of a loss. It wasn't a loss, but I just beat myself up about it.
Right.
And the intensity. Like, you know, like I missed the adrenaline rush of doing stuff in the Marine Corps with my buddies, whether it was, you know, late nights having crazy times in the Marine Corps or doing operations and doing cool stuff, like constantly something going on. And so I went back to construction and I started welding for my dad. I started running a skid steer. You know, I started learning how to operate equipment more and doing that and kind of a more of a supervisor-ish role.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really disgruntled over a period of time. I did that for a little while, for up until like 2014.
Okay.
And so, but I got better and better, you know, moved up and up, but it was just disgruntled. And I also, when I came back, I was bored. I was a tyrant, you know, I mean, to be honest, like I still had a short fuse. I didn't think about it at the time, but I probably suffered a bit from PTSD and
of
I didn't
course,
ever analyze
bro.
It.
Yeah.
But I didn't think that. I mean, it wasn't my thought.
Yeah.
And so I drank a lot, bars a lot.
Yeah.
Rowdiness a lot. I was single at the time. So just mayhem. I had a buddy that was a roommate of mine. So we'd go out all the time. And then I went to rodeo school. So I tried to become, I went up to Rosehill, Kansas and did like a weekender to learn how to ride bulls. I don't know shit about riding bulls, but I was like, fuck it, I'll do it. And I tried to figure that.
Badass dudes.
It's fucking a whole nother world.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother world.
Yeah, I was listening to that song by Garth Brooks, Rodeo, today.
Yeah.
When you listen to it, you're like, man, like those dudes. And again, it's like they're chasing. Yeah. Anyways.
It's a good point. They are chasing. And then, it's a different world. It's a whole different side of the planet. It's awesome though. And that's their thing. But it was, you know, I just tried it out and like this cool adrenaline rush. And then you went back to do my thing. I didn't stick with it or anything.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Hey, for those of you that are, you know, somewhere else that hate on California, California has rodeos. Just 100%. You know.
There's a lot of ranchers and farmers out here. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mostly agriculture.
I know. People don't know that. They think everybody's freaking surfing and stuff.
Anyways, I feel like we're talking about our ex here, you know?
Yeah. That's your good point.
Okay. So you get out of the military, you go work for your dad for a while, and then ultimately you end up in real estate, which is where you make your money. So,
So I had two friends that I'd met at the gym. One I'd met earlier
before I left.
Yeah, just a little.
Jeez, dude.
Mainly Pilates.
Yeah.
So I met some dudes at the gym and I met them before. So I knew them before I left and stuff like that. But then I came back, started working out with them. And it's oddly enough, both of them were kind of my mentors. I mean, truly, honestly, they were my mentors. And both of them were, they dropped out of high school and they're both entrepreneurs.
Right.
And so I didn't know that at the time. I'm like, what do you guys do? You know? And so to rewind back a little bit on my story, my dad being an engineer, I mean, college is a huge thing. They were very disappointed when I decided to join the Marine Corps. So they wanted me to, not disappointed that I was going to join the Marines. I want to be clear with that. But just, I think they would have rather me had to go to college and their traditional mindset, which even 5-10 years ago was still most people's mindset, was to go to college and get a degree and, you know, live a life like that.
Yep.
And it's not my destiny. And so all I'd heard my whole entire life is if you want to be somebody, you want to be successful, get a piece of paper, get a degree, be something.
Yes.
You know, otherwise you're a loser.
I thought the same thing growing
up. Like literally, you're a loser. Like there's nothing, you can't get a job. What are you going to do? Change tires and run against, you know, what I was doing. I was like, shit. So that was a big mental block. But I saw these two dudes. I'm like, these guys do great. They drive nice cars. They have a great life. Yeah. This is cool. And sometimes they'd work out at the gym during the day. I'm like, how do you guys have this time for
you? Yes.
Because growing up, as my dad was an entrepreneur, started his business, his schedule was how he made it. And his schedule was, you know, it's like 6 to 7. So it's like 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you work at your office and you go to the office. And, you know, it's very traditional times 10. And so I saw these guys living more of a lifestyle. And so I was like, dude, start asking questions. I started asking questions. The same questions I started asking on when I met them originally.
Yeah.
On how to get bigger, on how to get stronger, how to lift, how to eat. I would ask the questions to them now because they're both bigger than me, older than me guys, right? Like mentors. And I was like, okay, how do I start my own business? What do I do from there? I started asking questions and they were a ton of help, man.
Right.
So a big shout out to those guys. Like they're still, one of them is still in my life big time today.
Yeah.
And so having an entrepreneur friend that became, was massive. Just to unfog my lens. Like you mentioned earlier, you'd think that I would get that from having a father that way, but they run completely different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a mentor is like the most important thing, right? And if you don't believe it, go try to learn how to fly a plane on your own.
Correct.
Like, you know?
Well, I tell people this. I'm like, dude, Olympians, professional athletes, top performers in any kind of space have a coach or a mentor.
Yes.
All the time for accountability, for form, for a third eye, you know, or it's just get real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I asked them what to do. I was running a skid steer. I had met my wife at the time. So we were dating, looking to get married. And I was like, dude, I just hate where I felt trapped. I felt really, really trapped, man. And during that 4-year period, I went back to school. I got a degree. I got an associate's degree in municipal fire safety. So I was going to go down the firefighter route, you know, paramilitary organization, got my basic EMT. I was doing the whole thing. I graduated, you know, did great. But then I started applying for jobs and there was like thousands of applicants for like 2 positions at the time or 3 positions.
Crazy, right?
It was crazy.
It's crazy to see the difference nowadays, you know?
Yeah, it's less. Now it's actually easier. I think I've talked to people say it's easier to get on.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I was there, it was freaking hard. And I think what it was the wave of everybody that went to the military or into the war came out.
So the supply and demand
was massive.
That's a really
good
point.
Demand was small and the supply was huge.
Yeah.
And so if you didn't score 95 plus on the written test, then you didn't essentially get to go to the physical. And I wasn't worried about the physical, but I would score like an 89 or an 85 on the written and never get looked at. And so I would just never get up there. So I was like,
crazy.
Hey, things work out for a reason, man.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, again, like coming down to destiny, when you really, really want something and you force it and you try to just make it happen. And then the harder you try to force it, the more it moves away from you. And when you just let go and you let the universe or God or whatever take the wheel, and it's weird how things open up. When you just say, all right, I'm done fighting. I'm done trying to force my life to be a certain way. I'm going to follow my intuition. When I get the feeling to go left, I'm going to go left. When I get the feeling to go right, I'm going to go right.
Yep.
And funny enough, you end up, you know, in the right spot.
Yep. It gives you what you really need.
Right. Yep. Yeah. So you do real estate. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into real estate? You bought a property and rented it out?
Or? So one of those mentors, one of them owned a landscaping business, still does, very successful. I mean, it just kills it, does great. Other guy was in real estate and I didn't have a clue. Like real estate, it's a very broad word. Yeah, like, I'm like, right. Okay.
Well, and when you grow up in a working class kind of environment, you hear real estate and you just think like
agents,
that's for them.
Yeah.
You know, that's 100%. For other people. I can't do that because I'm not this trust fund kid. I don't know. Yeah. That was
no,
my
thought. I had the same concept. Like I can't, I own things. I was very scared, man. I mean, I bought my own home when I came back from Iraq. That's all I'd bought.
But
Oklahoma? In Oklahoma.
For how much?
I bought it at the time for $150,000.
Yeah, like that's, I mean.
And that was scary, man, because I bought it back when George Bush was giving out like a tax credit of $8,000. And that's post 2008. So I bought it in like 2009-ish, 2010.
Oh,
like,
so
I'm sorry,
were
I bought
down?
It 2010. So when I got out, yeah.
Yeah.
And so prices were low, like, and I still was like, this is freaking crazy. I'm going to be liable for this payment. What's going to go on? I had bought a truck in the past, but that's about it.
What were interest rates then?
If I remember correctly, like four or something.
Oh my
five. Gosh,
dude. Like,
yeah, because they stayed low for a long time.
Bro, and here's the thing about real estate is if you could tell yourself back then now, like imagine taking a peek into your life in the future.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
You'd be like, hey, interest rate, this same property is now worth $400,000 and interest rates are now 8%.
Yeah.
Fucking buy the place. You know? Yeah. Like if you could go back now, you'd buy 50 of them.
Of course, but it's it's devil's advocate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a double-edged sword. So you can't afford them. You know, and I've been, and something we'll get into too about my real estate journey. You know, I've been many times where I've gone that far and I've thought that way and I've been asset rich and cash poor. And that's another hard balance.
Yeah.
Because you can gobble up as much real estate as you can stomach. And then you get to a point where, you know, it's still, you still have to have cash and active cash to run a business.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like we were talking about, if you have equity in something, you can borrow against it, whether it's.
You can to a certain point. Yeah. Okay. Depending on where you're at. Yeah. Yeah. And I've had lines of credit, still have lines of credit and things like that. But you have, starting out, it's a balance.
Yeah. So you've made millions in real estate. Now you coach people, you mm-hmm. help people do the same thing. And that's, you know, again, like you're chasing that fulfillment. That's
for
fulfilling
sure.
to you.
I love it. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your coaching and how that works.
Yeah. So that mentor that taught me a little bit, and then I went down the self-development route of like the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books,
yeah.
all of that, learning it. And I dove in and I bought my first coaching program. My wife and let's go back. So I started my own business in 2014 as a builder.
Right.
Okay. So I started as a construction builder. I started my own building company. Coming from construction, I started building. It was the next thing for me to do, the progression, right?
Right.
And so that's what I did. That's what that buddy of mine that I worked out with, the mentor, told me. He's like, just start your own building company. So I did. I sold my first spec home. A spec home is a house that you build from ground up, and then you sell it. You have it for sale. And I made $45,000 on that, and I was more than I made in that entire year too, because I still had a job working for my dad.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, one deal, you know, makes you that. So that's where my eyes were opened. But I started building that whole company out and I built the whole custom home company. We would do high-end custom homes for one-off clients like you and your wife, build you a house from the ground up. And I did that for a long time. I built that up until I realized that that's not the life that I wanted to live either.
Right.
And so I started learning about real estate and my wife and I bought into even though I had all this construction experience, I didn't have any investing experience. I didn't have any investing knowledge. You don't know what you don't know. I was like, I got to learn something else.
Yeah.
I got to learn how to really do this. And so we spent a little over $50,000 on two different credit cards for like a 2-year mentorship where we'd fly out and we would do these classes, you know, once a quarter. And we would sit in a classroom for 2 days and just learn as much as we could. And then we went back and we're supposed to apply it.
Let's pause real quick. How much did you spend?
$50,000. So, a little over 50. It's like 52.
So to the average person,
I didn't have that money,
listening.
Bro.
Yeah. Yeah. So no. that right there is you saw the formula. And this is what I want to highlight for people. Like most people play on the edge and they don't take these risks. You grew up, you're a risk-taking person. I am too. And most entrepreneurs have checkered past alcohol, drugs, you know, things like that
risks.
Because they're taking risks.
Yeah.
So you took a risk, but here's the thing that I want to highlight. You know, the risk versus what you get on the other side is just the upside is just way higher. So even if it doesn't work out and you have to figure out another way to do it again, like eventually it's going to work out because you're going and finding the answers. It's like, there's this goal buried somewhere.
Yeah.
This guy's got the map and now you got to go find a way to get in, get the map, And then you got to put in the work to get to the gold. And that's what you did. So I just want to highlight that. You took a risk, but right. it's not like people think of it like you're just spending this money. How much more money have you made from that? I mean, what's your return on investment on that?
It's insane. Yeah. I couldn't even, I mean, thousands of X, you know? It's infinite, right? Yeah. It doesn't stop. It's not stopped.
Yeah, yeah. And the cool thing is you're sharing that with other people.
And I invest more and more and more. Like at this point now, I spend almost $100,000 a year on masterminds that I'm involved in where people are doing massive numbers compared to me. So I can continue to level up my business. I can continue to build better businesses and things like that. And business coaches specific, right? Like you're looking for fractional CFOs. You start looking into hiring a consultant for your business. It's the same. Yeah. So you're investing in mentors in certain areas or weak points in your business or your life.
Yeah, yeah.
It still doesn't stop.
Your network is your net worth.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And so long story short, I stopped building. I finished my last custom. Believe this. I finished my last custom house and we were doing big numbers towards the end of that year, 2021. But I had accumulated a few properties here and there.
So and this is in Oklahoma, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I had accumulated a few rentals and a little fix and flips.
Yeah.
And the way I was doing those and the way I teach people to get started into those, like I said, I didn't have the money.
Right.
I didn't have the money to go buy and put 20% down on property. Yeah. I mean, even $100,000 property, $20,000, there's no spare $20,000 when I'm building a building business and working my ass off. I also simultaneously am having what I told you, two kids, a wife that's still working kind of from home, trying to help as much as she can.
Right.
And basically a startup building company.
Well, and in 2021,
was in 2016. And then all the way up to 2021 is when I did my last custom.
Well, lumber was just insane. Oh, yeah.
2020 and 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. So you lose a lot of money like that. You're still doing revenue.
The way I had it structured, I don't. So what I would do is a cost plus basis when I did customs. And so you would have the property, you would have the debt, you would have the loan. And then I just do a cost plus and we run all those numbers through. Nice. So I never carried any of the liability.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Pros and cons though. A lot of times people feel like they own you. You work way more.
Yeah.
Their emails. I mean, it's just got very confrontational. In 21 and 20, it got 10 times more confrontational than it needed to be because you're fighting the subcontractors to get done in time.
Yeah.
And they want to get paid. And then you're fighting material because one, it's crazy prices in 2020 and 2021. And three, you're fighting vendors to even get some of that product. So you're like, there's scarcity in a lot of the materials, whether it be, you know, siding from Hardy or lumber or appliances that have no chips for them or don't have certain pieces to be built.
Yeah.
Well, and then you have Debbie that's emailing you why the appliance hasn't shown up and how the custom cabinet's not going to work if that appliance doesn't get fitted. And it just becomes a very, very negative atmosphere.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but you said something where it maybe wasn't the most ideal situation, but you use it as leverage to get to another spot where you wanted 100%. To be.
I started making, so I learned how to make money. I learned how to start a business and make money. That way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people will sit in a job and they just kind of accept it for what it is. But it's like, look, you may have to go work at a 7-Eleven for your first job or whatever you do. Right. My first job was selling cell phone cases at a mall in a kiosk.
Sure.
You know, I didn't stay there. I used that as leverage. I got the skills. I realized that I'd capped out there and then I jumped to the next opportunity. Eventually got into sales, eventually started my own business. And you go from one to another. So you joined the Marine Corps. You got out. You worked for your father's business. You went and then custom built homes.
Yep.
And then now investing.
Yep.
So,
So I essentially applied some of that knowledge, one, that I spent on the course. It wasn't fast either. So for everybody listening, I invested that money and then I didn't put a lot of that action in because I still had those fears.
Mm.
Until later, like I really should have gone until really 2021, I didn't go all in, I should say.
Yeah.
And so I would buy a few rentals and the way I would buy those is, have you heard of the Burr method? So I would buy it. I would renovate it. I would, put the renter in there and then I would refinance that.
Yeah.
And so I was able to do that with little to no money into the deal with certain banks and certain lenders that I had learned through this program and learned just by, you know, connecting.
Yeah.
And so I'd buy a few rentals here and there, but I still had to, I built a good life. I mean, when I was building, I was doing the parade of homes. I was building and the majority of stuff we did was over 3,500, 4,000 square feet. So we were doing high-end homes, especially in the Oklahoma area.
Yeah.
Sometimes up to 6,000, 7,000 square foot homes. And so I built something. The next step was really hard for me was that I had built this lifestyle around that kind of income.
Oh.
And so now it's like really, it's hard for me to go from stop the building company to go full-time investor.
Yeah.
So it was another leap, one, being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Second was like, stopping the one thing. And people were like, why would you just stop doing that? Well, because the way I set it up is I had to trade my time for that money.
Right. Yeah. And that right there, again, like you use that as leverage to figure out what you didn't want to do. And then you got yourself in a better position constantly.
Right.
So if somebody has $0.
Yeah.
Or maybe they got a little bit, but like they don't have an, you know, people always say, I get a message all the time where people are like, hey, how do I invest $5,000?
Yeah.
It's like, bro, go buy a coaching program. Like
that's, 100%.
You know, that's the best investment because you.
But they probably think you're just trying to sell them.
Yeah, but I don't have, you can't buy anything from me.
Good.
Know?
But it's the truth.
Yeah. No, it's, and don't buy one for 5,000. Go buy five for 1,000. Like, or just get on YouTube. Like, you don't have
to
start
learning from
money.
Books, YouTube's, podcasts, and then get into the coaching specifically for what you're looking to do.
Yeah. And having a mentor doesn't always, like, a coach and a mentor are two different things. Like, a coach is somebody you pay to hold you accountable and do all of that. There's a lot of coaches out there, but a mentor, I think, is usually how most of us, like you had two mentors.
Yep.
You don't find your mentors find you. It just happens.
True.
And it lines up. And again, call it destiny, call it timing, call it random. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I had two mentors who built a company called Beacon Payments. And I worked for these guys selling credit card processing, payroll, business to business in Boston.
Awesome.
And these guys who I still, it's very similar to your relationship. I saw these guys making money. I was like, these guys aren't like, you know, they're not extremely talented. They're just, they found the formula and they're doing the work.
Doing the work.
Yeah. And they mentored me. They saw that, you know, again, they see people come through all the time that just squander opportunity, but they saw that I was ready to go after it. I had that drive that we talked about.
Yep.
So anyways, circling back to you, if somebody has $0.
Yeah.
How do they get into real estate? How do they start making some money?
So the way I teach it now, what's so important is like I kind of went through all the processes. Like I've made the mistakes. I've grown different businesses. I've gone down all these little roads. And what I do now and what's huge or what I teach people to get into, you can get into, I think people get distracted so many times by social media.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much out there. There's the multifamilies. They're getting screamed at. There's the storage units. There's VRBOs. You hear all this crap.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong. I'm sure those things do make money. But if you want to start, if you are a person that has a job or that does decent or doesn't have a job and still wants to get into real estate but still make some income, owning and starting out in affordable housing is a no-brainer because what I'm trying to look for is mitigating risk. As much as I'm a risk taker, I still wanted to mitigate losses. I still wanted to make sure that I made that money because as a spec home builder when I was building, that's a massive risk. And I didn't know what I didn't know, but I was many times, like I told y'all, I made $45,000 on one. There was times where I made $100,000 on one and the same year I have over $100,000 of a loss. So it was a loss of a year.
Yeah.
You know, on specifically like two properties that we are building for sale.
Right.
And then I would add the customs in there. But when you're getting into it, you want to mitigate as much loss or as much loss and risk as you can. Right. And so affordable housing, you want to have multiple exit strategies.
Yes.
So the way you get into it is you buy a property at discount, you add value to the property, meaning you bring up the condition of the property, you make the property worth more. There's specific formulas and numbers that have to be made. And then once it's worth more, typically the bank will loan you the majority of that debt, of what you have in it. So let's for round numbers, numbers. If you bought a property for $50,000, and I know you're like, oh my God, can I buy a property for $50,000? Yes, they're still out there. But let's just use this for round numbers. Call it 500, same math.
Right.
$50,000. You put $20,000 into it to rehab it. Going into the deal, if you know the neighboring homes in the surrounding areas are going to be fixed up, is worth $100,000. You're all in at $70,000. You have now a property that's worth $100,000. You just created $30,000 in equity spread.
Right.
Right? And so you have the option to sell that property as a flip. You have the option to keep that property as a rental because at $70,000 being worth $100,000, you almost have no debt in it because banks will loan you 70% loan to value.
Mm.
And you can cash flow it. So your payment's going to be lower because you only owe 70.
Right.
Okay. Or worst case scenario, you can creatively sell it and become the bank. And there's multiple strategies. But my point is when you get into that one deal correctly, you can't get hurt as long as you follow the process.
Well, there's a formula.
There's a formula.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get into that formula when we come back. But here's a message from our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by LazyCowStaffing.com. If you're an entrepreneur that values your time, you need a virtual assistant. Listen, if you hire somebody in the Philippines, you get somebody with an incredible work ethic, but also with cost of living being much lower, you can not only pay them less than you would pay somebody here, but it gives you an ability to pay somebody extremely well for where they live. So if you're looking for a virtual assistant, we hire, train, and place them in your business for a one-time fee. So if you're interested in that, go to LazyCowStaffing.com and fill out the form, schedule a call, and we'll get your virtual assistant lined up. And we're back. So we were talking about real estate and how to get in on your first deal.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of ran through the numbers a minute ago. You know, if you can get into a deal at discount and then add value, you're forcing the appreciation. And so you're driving a margin between what you owe and what the property's worth. And so when you do that, you've created an equity spread. You've created potential profit if you decide to sell the property.
Yep.
And typically, you, since you have less than what it's worth, you're not having to bring money to the table. You're creating that sweat equity is what we call it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so let's talk about getting a mentor in real estate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to talk about your coaching, and then I want to talk about mentorship and kind of how it's a little different, right?
Sure.
A mentor is usually somebody you kind of meet organically, somebody natural, and a mentor teaches you basically for free. But a coach holds you accountable, and there's a lot more structure to it. So how does your coaching work? What does it look like to work with you?
So say we just started, we have a course. And so I have a course inside of it. We have lots of video series that you can constantly educate yourself with. And then I also am on the calls. So it's really me. And
nice.
So I work with people directly, and I explain to them the processes. And what I wish I had when I started, like when I told y'all I invested $50,000+ in that course, in that coaching program, I want to call it, for 2 years going out physically, what I wish I had was somebody to call or to text or to message or to email while I was going through the process of a deal.
Right.
I wish I had somebody to say, is my underwriting correct on this deal?
Yeah.
Is this a deal? You know, and I didn't. And so there was times that I would implement the education that I had and make mistakes.
Right.
And so I had to learn the hard way and lost money on a few things or had to figure it out. And so what I offer now is like, I wish I had that. That's what I want to give people. I want people to be able to ask questions during the process of purchasing their first rental, their first flip, and or their creative financing strategies. And so I want to be there for them during the process because that's how I learn. That's how I learn anything.
Yeah.
You know, a coach is really supposed to be there at the time of need or coaching you through things they see you're doing wrong and holding you accountable, as you said, to do the process. There's people that have signed up for the program and have absolutely killed it in the first 90 days. And then there's other people that you can tell that definitely need pushed along, and everybody's different. So it's bespoke.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, so just picture this, right? You're in a dark room and you got a buddy with a flashlight and you say, hey, bro, can you turn this flashlight on? And he turns it on and all of a sudden you can see a certain thing. Hey, can you point it over there? You know, that's what being mentored or having a coach is like, having somebody that can see what you can't see and can give you and leverage their experience so that you can take it. And one thing that people get wrong a lot is successful people don't want to help other people, that they're greedy, that they, dude, I, especially self-made people, I feel like self-made people are so incredibly passionate about helping other people.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to sniff out when somebody's not willing to put in the work, you know?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. So, and people are very willing to help you out. You know, when you're having constructive conversations and you find that somebody is going to do it, I'm more willing to invest even more time with somebody because it's exciting to see somebody else win.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you live in an abundant mindset, you're not worried about somebody else taking. I've heard people say that too, right? Like, aren't you worried about creating more people in your space? No, absolutely not. Because of what you said earlier, 9 out of 10 people won't do it anyway.
Yeah, right.
You know, and so the people that invest their money up front, it actually makes them commit more too.
Right.
You know, and it also allows me to dedicate the time to them and not take away from my own companies, my own employees with a loss.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny. You talked about the abundance mindset and how some people go into lack. When I started this studio, you know, people kind of have their eyes on what won't work versus what will work. So a lot of people ask me like, oh, you're opening up a podcast and video studio that people can rent out. Why are you doing that? There's other ones out there. Somebody could easily just start it up. And it's like, number one, most people won't. They'll talk about it. They'll think about it, but they'll end up renting the space because they don't want to take the risk, which is fine. But two, it's like, dude, I just don't care. I'm going to offer a better, you know, when you walk in, we give you a Path water bottle. Like, just the little details that we add into the customer experience when people come in here is what I want people to remember. And if you can just offer a phenomenal product and service and you're building a good relationship, people will go with you, and people aren't out there to take from you. You'll find more partners to work with than you'll find people that want to take from
you.
That's
an open market. Yeah. Open market speaks for the person that has the best product, that has the highest, or not always the best product, sometimes the most known product, right?
Yeah, right.
So there's a lot of times people buy what they know because they didn't know there was a better option.
Right.
But that goes back and saying that that business that people don't know about is doing a bad job at marketing.
Right. So. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, look, like, you guys ever heard of Gucci?
Exactly.
Right.
Everybody's heard of Gucci.
How much would you pay for Gucci?
Yeah.
Whatever they say. Right. Yep. You know, there's a bunch of other clothing brands that you could buy that you've never heard of, and they just don't have the notoriety.
Right. Probably better quality in some aspects. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah. But yeah, so I mean, and they probably cost about the same to design. You know?
True.
So, well, Austin, where can people reach out to you? How do they get connected with
you? Sure, sure.
And how do they get working with you? Let's just say that somebody's like, bro, I like this dude. I want to start doing coaching with him. How do they get in contact with you?
Yeah, best thing to do is go to www.austinhancock.com or direct message me on Instagram, austin.hancock1, and then just message me there. We'll chat back and forth, kind of communicate and see where you're at and what you're looking to do, and then we'll model it to make sure that you're successful in that route. So you can check out my Instagram page, and I think we throw stuff out on TikTok and all the other social channels as well.
Nice. Yeah. And whether you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you're watching on YouTube, in the description of wherever you're watching this, you're going to find his social handles, his website, all that stuff. So go follow this dude. Send him a message. If you have a podcast, have this dude on. Phenomenal guest.
Love it. I appreciate it.
And
I appreciate you having me out here, man. Yep. This is awesome. This studio is awesome. I can vouch for it right here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
100%.
Can you leave our audience with one last positive message?
Ooh.
I know. I'll put you on the spot.
Last. That is a good one. Positive message. Your financial development will never surpass your personal development. Damn. And I'll elaborate a little bit, because people want the money, but they don't look at their own life and reconcile their own life. And you have to be honest, like, do you think that you live a life of what a successful person lives and you deserve the money? And even people that get rich really quick, lottery, sports athletes, that money will go away and eviscerate because your personal development hasn't sped up to the financial gain that you've had, and then understanding financial literacy.
Damn.
So,
well, there you have it, folks. Go follow this guy. And if you haven't yet, go ahead and smash that subscribe button. Leave a like. If you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts, go and write us a review. It helps us phenomenally. And if you can, share this with one person. Thanks, guys. Take care.